Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 52 on March 12th, 2020. On this episode, the amazing Rue Strand is here to talk about her latest project called Cake Minds, a new platform to educate, support, and provide a framework for sugar arts teachers anywhere in the world. We also discuss how helpful Sugarcraft can be in our social lives and for mental health awareness and support. So whether you're alone in your kitchen hammering out your latest masterpiece for a client or a competition, portioning out supplies for your next teaching gig, or self-isolating to avoid getting sick and taking the time to refine your artistic skills, let's get this show started to remind you that no matter what, you're not alone on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is legendary cake artist and founder of Cake Minds, Rue Strand. Hello!
Hello, Kimberly. Sorry, I'm laughing. Legendary, that's funny. Sorry.
Well, that's what, yes, because, okay, I don't often pay for classes because I don't sell cake, so it's difficult for me to sometimes cost justify paid classes. But I will tell you, every time I've been tempted at CI to take a class, it's been your structures class.
Wow.
And I look at it every time and I'm go, but I have all these meetings I need to do and I have, and then I don't do it. But I have, because Evil Cake Genius had a deal where you got some Cake Flicks classes as part of a purchase. I have your pirate class sitting there on Cake Flicks ready to watch it. I haven't watched any of the ones I bought, but yeah, I bought on there Rose Mayfield's Little Wolf and Molly Robbins Pie and Chips, which I did watch to learn how to do the gravy. And then I have your Princess Pirate Bonnie Blueheart.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a few years ago now. I went up to see Paul and do that. That was, goodness me. Oh, I'm very flattered. Thank you very much.
Yes. No, and I have looked at your photos of structure for years and how you twist wire, because I know how to do my structure, but sometimes it isn't as strong as I'd like. So I have like literally zoomed in on pictures of your structure. Where, how are the ankles that strong? Where is she putting the wire through the board or whatever? No, you don't know this. I've just worshipped you for a very long time.
Thank you very much. Those things were kind of a journey for me, and that's why I first entered Cake International, because I wanted to do a standing figure, but I had no reason to make it. I thought, if I enter the competition, that'll give me a reason to make it. So I did, and the rest was a bit of history, really, because I didn't expect to get a gold or anything. I mean, each time, what I learned from that was listening to the feedback. And I know I'm a judge now, but it was a very important part of it for me, to be honest. Listening to the feedback from Alan at the time and taking on board what he said and realising that, really deep down, you do know your mistakes when you enter a competition, mm-hmm. and you know the judge comes and gives you feedback. It's not really, it shouldn't really be a surprise, but the realization of it. Then each time I entered, I had a specific thing that I wanted to target and do, and my penultimate one was I always wanted to get to a point where I had a female figure in heels standing on a board. That was pretty special, that one, because I did sort of work towards it, but it took me a good few years to get there, and Lola, and she won Best in Show. So, but I've always enjoyed working with the figure work, and it just became my thing, really, working with armatures and making little people. I love doing it. So it was good. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes, well, that's Karen what Port- I meant, legendary.
It was Karen Portaleo that inspired me in the first place.
Yes.
I saw her classes, and she's my kind of like person that I'd go and do a class with. In the early days, she was doing these really sort of jolly, curvy ladies, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to copy her, which is why I went the other way and did these slim, like pin-up girls. So yeah,
that, well, that's why I say you're legendary, because I mean you've won these awards. I mean, people know who you are. So
I know it's. I always find it always.
It's weird, isn't it?
I'm sat here kind of with my hands on my head, because I always find that I'm just the same as anybody else. And, you know, I'm just part of, it's just a bit of the journey that I'm on. That's the way I look at it. We're all at different points. And it always amazes me that people do know who I am, because I don't expect them to. I think that's common. Thank you.
That is common, though. I mean, especially when I have people on the show, they're like, wait, what? You've seen my work? And I mean, if they've been on TV, they kind of expect it a little bit. But I think we kind of, in our industry, a lot of us worship each other, but we work alone in our kitchens. And so other than a like or a heart on a Facebook photo, we don't often get to tell each other. I mean, if you see each other at a show, you might go, yay, I love your work or whatever. But we don't often get a lot of direct communication to the people who aren't on TV. Yeah.
No, because we are sort of isolated at home, as you say, absolutely. And our only kind of contact is through social media.
Yeah.
And that's not always a healthy thing either. So I think as a creative as well, you can be very introvert and very, you're not very good at accepting praise sometimes, are you? We're all very guilty of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, I think that's quite a hard, not a lesson, but something to learn to accept and graciously or otherwise, really. We're not very good at blowing our own trumpets, are we? I think it sits down in the pit of your stomach sometimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I get really freaked out when people praise me. I'm okay if they praise my work. I've always been okay. Like from when I first was entering the Austin show, the first time we had Mike McCary out, who I call the cake god. I worship Mike McCary like whatever. And the first time he came to the show, I was super starstruck. And he does not like hearing that, which is part of why we call him the cake god now as a joke, because he doesn't like it in a pleasant sort of way. When he was first at our show and I had done a 6-foot-tall science fiction cake, I was told he wanted to talk to me and I couldn't go talk to him. Like, it took me a day to go to finally talk to him. And then he said all these lovely things and all I heard in my head was, Mike McCary's talking to me. So this day I don't know what he said. He was offering pictures, but I was like, I can't. But what I asked for was, could someone take a picture of Mike looking at my cake? Because that's what, for me, I mean, since then I've had pictures taken with him and, you know, now it's one of my bragging rights, whatever. But like him looking at my cake was like the shining pinnacle moment of success.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah, because for us it's hard. The imposter syndrome is thick in our community.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is very rife and it's very difficult to get through.
Mm-hmm.
I find it actually... with my new venture, it's kind of turned on its head a little bit and I find it easier to talk about that. It's funny, but because it's not, I don't feel like it's directly about me.
Right.
It's about other people and the concept of it all. So that's been an interesting journey for me from that kind of, like you're saying, about your own personal work and what you're doing and producing to more of a business kind of perspective. If that makes sense.
Yes, totally. Because, well, okay, and we should talk about what Cake Minds is and what you're doing, because it's amazing. But I can totally see how I bet it's so much easier for you to praise someone else and to help someone else praise someone else than it is for you to accept praise.
Yeah.
I'm 100% there.
Yes, absolutely. I think, like we began this with you sort of saying about how much you admired my work and everything. And I found that, you know, it's such a difficult thing. But when now with Cake Minds and my teachers, I think of it as it's a collective thing. So anybody praising Cake Minds is praising us collectively and not just me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've implemented it. Yes. And I run it and I head it up and I founded it. But at the end of the day, without the teachers and ongoing students, there is no Cake Minds, so it's much easier to talk about. And it's a really strange, it's actually a very strange realisation, and actually then you're comfortable doing that. So just that kind of different mindset, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do a thing called Cake Formations. I started off online, I think it was before I started the podcast. I can't remember, it's so long ago now. But then I put them on the show too, Cake Formations. And sometimes it's just a simple thing of, you're all awesome, you're doing amazing things. And if someone said that to me, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, you don't mean me. But people actually, there are people who say, oh, your Cake Formations made my day. And so then that makes me think, oh, okay, I'll keep doing it. Because it is valuable to someone. Like I keep saying on this show, the show is for people, I mean, for doing whatever they want. I happen to know Jesse Lesser listens to this while on the treadmill right now. Hi, Jesse. Generally, the idea is you're in your kitchen, you're listening to podcasts or music, you're working on your cake. Why not have a podcast about what you're working on? And so then I always hope there's someone who's at that point where they hate what they're working on, and I can drop in the cake formation that says, whatever you're working on is going to be amazing. And then they go, yeah.
Yeah, you go through that barrier. Just, you know, that barrier's there. Mm-hmm. Remember this, when I made cakes, there was always that point, that barrier when this is rubbish. This is not going to work. Mm-hmm. And that actually was a journey in itself, especially when you first start. And then after so many years, you end up going, oh, for goodness sake, stop telling yourself it's not going to work. Because when you finish it, you go, oh, that's all right, actually. Mm-hmm. And you surprise yourself. So it is, you start to have a little bit of faith in what you're doing. But it is hard sometimes, isn't it? Especially if you're working on something that's so different to what you've done before. Mm-hmm. And you're challenging yourself. So that's good. I like that.
I find I beat myself up less if it's a challenge or experiment, because failure is a legitimate result of an experiment, because failure is still data for an experiment. So if I fail at something, I had a failure. It was a thing I was trying to do for some time, and I finally got around to doing it over Christmas, and it didn't work the way I thought it would in my mind. And I went, all right, well, that's valuable data. Who wants free cookies? Like, so. Whereas if it was my CI entry, all the screaming when it isn't working, it's just like, because that's the worst, because you're doing the techniques you're supposed to be good at for someone else to judge, and something isn't working, that's like, bark!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not easy, is it? And I think as well, it's also really hard to recreate something as well. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the first attempt and the first make of that, when it's right, I mean, even though you've made mistakes like there in your journey towards making it and all the different steps you're trying and the experimenting and all that sort of thing, the finished product is usually like, yay, I've done that. But, you know, when you're happy with it, you go and try and do that again a second time, and it's just never, ever quite the same. Because I don't think you have those same experiences internally, do you? Even the disappointments,
yeah.
The highs are the highs with it as well.
Yeah. Well, that's, and whenever I've done teaching, you make your sample piece for the photos for the class. You know, mostly the teaching I do is for kids in Austin. So, which is a different audience anyway, because they half the time don't care if it looks like what the number of kids I've said we're making, okay, let's make ladybug cookies. And they're like, can we make a spaceship? I'm like, yeah, of course you can make whatever, whatever. So kids are more free
I used to run a guide unit or help run a guide unit for 20 odd years. So whenever we did anything like that, there was always an element of girls who would just do their thing. And I'm like, fine, whatever. As long as you're taking part, I don't mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Creative.
Right. You're doing your thing. You're not poking the kid beside you. Thumbs up. Awesome.
And isn't it funny? As adults, we get older and we actually just want to make exactly the same as the teacher, to the teacher's standard and all that.
Exactly.
Sort of thing.
We learn to beat ourselves up. But so when I would make the model for photos. And then the photos go off, and then like 3 months later, now I got to make it live in front of a class. It's not even close. It's just, okay.
How did I do that?
because I'm with kids, I can sort of fake my way through it and go, well, the dragon I'm going to make in front of you all now is going to be different because I'm making it standing up and backwards, which is also true because you're making it standing up and backwards. Also, you haven't slept in 2 days because it's a cake show. Making the same. I don't understand sometimes when I see people who can do the same things multiple times. I'm like, that's a kind of witchcraft I don't possess.
No, I don't either. I think they're all different. They all just end up with their own personalities, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Different characters, same outfit.
But as part of Cake Minds, you are training teachers, and so obviously these issues must come up.
So, if I just sort of tell you a bit about it, if that's okay.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Where it came from. I ran a monthly modeler class. I mean, it's been going now for about 7 or 8 years. And I had students coming to me. So I started teaching about 10 years ago, I suppose. And I found that they wanted to do something. There wasn't many classes around them. There wasn't much available. And the people that would come in said, oh, I wish I could do this all the time. And I kind of out of that came a monthly class, 2 hours, meet once a month. I'll do a project with you. And it was very, it's always been very low key with me. They would, and they still do. My students can turn up to my house, sit around my kitchen table, not knowing what we're going to make, and me with nothing in front of me going, right, so today we're going to make, I don't know, a knight in shining armour, and we just make it together. And it's, you know, we make mistakes and we learn and all that sort of thing. And it's that they, I just was amazed that just came back every month to, you know, to this, because they didn't know what they were going to make. And still to this day, they can turn up not knowing what they're going to make that week, but they love it. But what happened was, so these groups ran for a long time, and there was a lot of people coming to me that I noticed that were, there was people that were widowed, people that had had anxiety, people that it's mostly ladies, anxiety, all sorts of different sort of life issues going on. But they always came and they loved their 2 hours kind of just switching off and making and playing and being with other people that were doing the same thing and in different situations. About, where are we? About 3 years ago, I stopped them because I was planning to move to France, which didn't work. And we came back and I started the monthly modellers again. This was beginning of this year. And last year.
Right. Yeah.
And what I saw, and what the penny that dropped with me, was my group of students all wanted to be with the same people that they were beforehand. Those little groups, mm-hmm. they'd made friends, and I'd watched this without realizing it, and I realized how close all these ladies and, you know, friendship groups that they'd formed. And in actual fact, last year, one of the groups, they were all my friends as well. And I actually went on holiday with 4 of them last year. And I was just like, oh my goodness, what have I done? And they'd all supported each other. And I'd watched them grow and get confidence and all this sort of thing. And I thought, this is amazing. I've done this. I've enabled this. I've enabled them to make friends with each other. And they've all got, some have gone on to run their own businesses. Some of them have opened bakeries, all sorts of things. And I wanted other people to experience that. I thought, gosh, if this is, and this has done me good, they've seen me through some really difficult times in my life as well. I want other people to experience this. And so I was looking at rebranding and changing my business anyway, and I was in the process of signing up to do a one-to-one coaching with Susie Witt. And so she's sort of been in the background cheering me on and advising me and being my mentor and everything like that. And it's not Susie saying you need to do this. It's like they're your, my ideas and all this sort of thing. She's just helped me shape it. So I thought, how amazing would it be if I did the tutorials, and there were teachers might like to come on board, and I'll give them everything they need and support them in whether they're an experienced teacher or whatever level they're at. And well, I launched it in October last year. It was also about mental health and well-being, and how Sugarcraft has, when you actually start talking to people in the industry, the number of people that have come into our industry, like my students started coming to my classes because of something that's happened in their lives. It is absolutely, it's just incredible, mm-hmm. that everyone has a story. And it blew me away when I realized just how many people had come into our industry and how that part was being, we weren't really addressing it in our industry, that importance of like mental health and well-being. And I just wanted to kind of give other people the chance to support each other. So these, you know, small networks of teachers making their own small communities of monthly modellers, and then in turn the teachers coming together and supporting each other, and mm-hmm. well,
I mean,
I'm completely blown away by how it's been received and the number of people that have jumped on board with me from the beginning. And they know I get very emotional about it, because I just didn't realise or expect it to take so much, and I just want and hope to grow it even more. It's something that's I'm really passionate about, and the teachers that have come into this have just absolutely jumped in with both feet, not knowing what to expect, and have gone above and beyond helping each other and supporting each other. We have people who've never taught before, so they're getting supported by me through other teachers who are teaching, people opening their own cake schools and wanting to expand their classes out. Somebody who has actually given work up and retired early and doing this, along with a few other bits and pieces. It's complementing her lifestyle, stopping her habit, her saving her driving an hour to and from work every day, adjust. And they, all my teachers come with their stories and their backgrounds as well. And so it's really special, and it's growing into something really amazing.
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay, because you're awesome.
Sounds amazing, because you're right. This mental health thing, I mean, people are talking about it more in the last years than used to. It's, you know, our WI resolution, all that about mental health matters and all that. But actually having art therapy is really cool and important. And sometimes it's nice to make art that you're not having to worry about selling.
Yeah, I think as well. I have a small Facebook group as a Cake Minds community. I noticed that there were a lot of cake groups, and you go in and you share your cake and it is mind blowing. And I think I said to you before we spoke, we actually started talking. One of the things that I stopped doing was following a lot of people with regard to cake, because my own self-doubt would creep in and I'd think, mm-hmm. Oh my God, look at what these people are doing. I can never do that. How am I going to keep up? But it took a long time, and that part of that journey was to realise, this is what I do, be proud of what you do, you know, and own what you do, and don't think that you have to do the same as, you know, for example, some of the work that is coming in from, as a judge as well, Cake International, the work by some of the Asian people mm-hmm. is mind-blowing. And I'm just like, oh my God, how have they done that? Mm-hmm. But my chubby fingers are the big Amazon, you know, Amazonian British white woman. I'm not the same as lovely petite fingers of somebody of an Asian origin. And my eyesight's going, so I can't see that
crazy. That's a huge problem for me right now. It is. You know, it matters.
It's learning to accept it.
Yeah.
And it's these self-doubts. You say that imposter syndrome. And it is also, sorry, I'm going to go the mental health side of it as well. My other thing, Mike, is what I realised as well was, and I'd watched over the years, so many people discovered Sugarcraft. It was their therapy and they loved it. And it was, you know, that it helped them. And then they decided they'd go and do this full time. And what I saw, watched happening, and I've been very careful with myself over the years, I would never work through the night, although a few years ago, social media grabbed hold of me and I ended up having a bit of a meltdown with that and having to take a big step back, was that when people then decided they were going to build their industry and it became all consuming, completely consuming, and mm-hmm. there was a lack of sleep and they were juggling jobs and their expectations on themselves, what was initially a therapy became their biggest nightmare. Mm-hmm. So I was trying also, and it's maybe another, you know, this will all kind of meld in at some point along the line with Cake Minds, is that it's about if all you do is Sugarcraft, sometimes you need to step away from that and you need to do a different creative craft, because that will become your therapy if all you're doing. Do you see what I do? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes, because that's why I'm knitting again.
And I had a meltdown over the social media, and my partner would leave for work at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd be sat on laptop, and he'd come through the door at 6:30 or 7:00 in the evening, and I was still sat on the laptop. And he said in the evening, he watched me, I'd go from my emails to my website to Facebook to Instagram. He said, and it was like a vicious circle of you just waiting for stuff to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it just got the better of me. And it was just before Christmas, and I got poorly and got the flu or something. And I took a big break away from it, and I taught myself to crochet. That was my kind of outlet, my other creative outlet. So there are things there for me that I do apart from sugar crafting. And I just think it's important. And it is about us just taking that time away. Then my Facebook group is about that. It's not about, I've gone off track from what I was originally saying.
No, this is important stuff. No.
So I noticed there are so many cake groups on Facebook, and everybody shares their cake. And I saw people saying, I might as well give up now. This isn't, I'm never going to be good. And I'm just like, no, stop. This isn't what it's about. Those people are on a different part of their journey to you. Don't beat yourself up. So I started a Facebook group where you're not allowed to share your cakes. You can share your journey in cakes where you started. So share your first cake and then show me what you're doing now. And so other people can see that we all started at the beginning, and there is, you know, we're all at different points. You know, in 10 years' time, this could be you sat doing a podcast with Kimberly on the evidence, you know, not just that's it's just like, so I'm trying to build that. Stop beating yourself up, says she.
Well, but we do that, because that's the imposter syndrome. Is it is so much easier for me to compliment you than hear a compliment myself. And that's why the art therapy in all forms is useful, because, you know, if you're feeling stressed about a judged entry piece or a paid client cake, then go knit in front of the TV. And like, I just made a blanket for an online friend who's an activist, and she's really like, just the world keeps beating her down. She's a woman of color in America, an activist, and she's constantly in Facebook jail because she has the audacity to say something about white people, which is totally true. Yeah, you know, like I have copied her posts, and I don't get in trouble. She does, because she's black. And I just thought, you know, I need to do something for her. And she has this really funny pug who's known for his flatulence and ridiculous facial expressions. And I've memed the pug for her in the past. And so I just spent a year and a half, because it took me forever, a little bit here and there, knitting her a dog blanket that looks like the meme.
Yeah.
And it took forever, because stockinette stitch takes forever. And like any project, when you're halfway through, you question why did you start?
Yeah.
But then when it's done, like I sent
that's
it to her.
I like crochet. It's all lots of squares.
Exactly.
They don't take long.
Because I just finished that blanket, I've decided I need to learn to crochet, and I'm going to make myself a rainbow granny square blanket, because I want one.
Yep.
If I was selling cakes all the time, which is why I don't, I set my prices so high no one will order, because I don't really want to stay up all night making cakes anymore. I never really did do a lot of orders. I used to in the States do a lot of the donations, the Bake-A-Wish, and competitions and things. But I've stepped out of competitions. I've stepped out of stuff. And so really the cake now is because I want to. And then, at night, my other resolution last year that's been working out really well for me is no social media after dinner. So I'm not doing what you were saying, like where you feel like you can't quit it because someone's going to say something again.
Yeah.
Someone's going to do something, or especially if it's an American's answer me overnight or whatever, they're going to say something that I couldn't sleep. So I just, no social media after dinner. Yeah. I'm much more aggressive about defriending and blocking people who aren't respectful of my boundaries. And that's so hard for us as women to say, this is my boundary, don't cross it.
No, absolutely. I'm a big. I stopped taking my phone to bed with me about 2 years ago now, and I'm a big advocate of it. And I try and get people, encourage people in my group, to not take their phones upstairs. And the difference it's made to my sleep is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice as well, if I do have my phone with me, so say we're on, my daughter had a baby in last November. It was my first grandchild.
Congratulations.
And the last month of her pregnancy was by my bedside waiting just in case I was needed. And it wasn't just to do with her pregnancy or that. The phone was just there. I'd pick it up in the middle of the night, and instead of turning over and going back to sleep, well, I just wonder what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell it was starting to take a grip again. As soon as that baby was born, a phone was back downstairs. You know, and I try as well in the evenings. So I'm a bit like, my partner comes through the door. He's not into social media at all.
Neither is
so
mine.
So I try to respect that. And yes, sometimes I need, because of the way I'm working and my teachers sometimes have full-time jobs, I understand that that's in the evening I need to be able to be available to them. But I try not to be on there constantly. So
you need to have a limit, and it's reasonable to set limits.
Absolutely.
And Don Thanks. Butler, I'm talking to you. It is reasonable to not answer emails at 2 o'clock in the morning, Don Butler.
Yeah.
when she was talking about what is sleep, but because she wants to answer all her customers all the time, which is so awesome, and she's such an amazing lady.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like sometimes someone should go snip her Wi-Fi just so she could sleep, which I would never do because what a horrifying thought. But yeah,
I've been with Dawn when she's answered everybody, and I'm like, oh my word, how'd she do this?
Mm-hmm.
She is amazing. She is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
She's like a force to be reckoned with and a little whirlwind. And I just don't know. We were in India at the first Cake show together. So we spent about 2 weeks together, and it was just like, oh my God, these people, they just don't stop messaging her.
No, they don't.
She's answering all of them.
I know. I'm pretty sure she's an army of clones. There's several people in our industry, I'm pretty sure, are at least 10 people wrapped up in one package. Because,
Yeah.
But, I mean, so one of my secrets is I don't put social media on my phone. I only do social media. I'm talking to you on Messenger through my laptop right now. And Messenger gets onto my phone for 3 days a year. And that's for Cake International only, so we can people with different mobile phone plans can talk to each other. Like I realized a friend from Ireland was costing her, €2 to text me to say, oh, we're over here. So I put Messenger on for a Cake show, so people can find, where are you? I'm over by this booth. Okay, I'm going to go to this show now. Yeah. So that's fine. And then as soon as I get home, and sometimes even on the Sunday when I'm sitting around in that last demo or whatever, I'll just delete Messenger. No Messenger on my phone, because otherwise people bug me all the time. I mean, they don't mean to be bugging me, but like, then I feel like I'm being bugged, and then I'm like maybe cranky responding. And I have Facebook on the phone only enough so I can play some games. I never, ever, ever look at Facebook on the phone. You can't reach me when I've gone to bed. Yeah. Yeah, I do like my phone before bed because I play incredibly boring games to put me to sleep so my fiction writer busy brain shuts up. Because that's my other problem with sleeping is I write fiction and the fake people who live in my head never stop talking or they have fights and then I have an adrenaline rush or they have, makeup time. And then I'm like, well, I have that hormone rush. Like, I can't sleep because there's fake people. So I play, the farming, the games where, not the stress farming games where you have to be online at a certain time. The ones where you can do whatever you're going to do and then shut it off and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I play those.
Yeah.
Put me to sleep. Yeah. And it's my alarm clock too. So, but I have do not disturb automatically. So, the only person who can get, there are two people who can get through my do not disturb are my 14-year-old and my husband. And the rest of the time it's off.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
I didn't know you could set it like that.
Well, you can.
Yeah, no, okay. I get to be tempted.
It depends on what you're on. So I've recently had to switch to iPhone because I was on Pixels and they kept breaking. There's things I like from either and I'm not happy with either. Do you know what I mean? So on an Android phone, you can set any number of do not disturb programs. So I would have it from 10 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock on weekday mornings. Nothing got through other than the approved people.
No.
So that way if a Kado was texting me that they were bringing my groceries, I wasn't being woken up. And then I had a weekend setting that went to like 10 o'clock in the morning because I don't like weekend mornings. but then on the iPhone, you can only set one program. So I currently have it from like 11 o'clock at night to 9 a.m. But then sometimes my husband texts me while I'm taking my daughter to school at 8. And I don't know. That one I'm not so... But you can on either of those, you can at least set a do not disturb recurring. And that you can tell it I think, you know, I'm not sure on the iPhone. On the Android, you could let some applications bypass it. And Messenger always wanted to, and that really bugged me. That was where I started to learn to not have Messenger on the phone. Because it would float over everything, even if you told it not to, which really bugged me. I think on the iPhone it might be more locked down, but I've never actually loaded it on the iPhone, so I'm not sure. But yes, I'm a strong advocate of what... I mean, because some people want to do social media all night. Great! I would never tell anyone not to do it if it's working for them.
No, that's right. That's exactly it. My thing was it's just people... who were struggling to sleep, and I'd sort of suggest it. And the people that tried it did come back and say, actually, I have slept really well.
Mm-hmm. I think it helps.
So it's, but it is, everybody's different. And that is it as well, isn't it? Everybody's different. So
right.
We all do things. We find what's right for us. And I think it's about being able to find what's right for us and making it work for us so that we don't end up in a heap. And I've been through too much in the last 10 years. My life has been an absolute roller coaster of, well.
Yeah.
You know, I've lost everything twice, I would say. You know, 13 years ago or so, I got divorced and lost everything because it wasn't my fault. Well, not saying my fault, it wasn't my choice. Mm. We're friends now. If you're listening, Stephen, it's absolutely, he knows that. I'm absolutely fine with it. It's the best thing you did for me, bless him. No, it isn't. But it's just, that's just life. And through that, I lost everything, a home and my children, I did lose my children because of the situation. We'd moved from the family home into a pub. And when I had to leave, I had nowhere to take my children with me. And although they were older, 15 and 18, it wasn't easy. I didn't expect to not be with my kids at that age. Mm-hmm. And that was hard. But I had to start all over again. I, you know, lost everything. Family home went and paid debts off and all that sort of thing. So that was interesting. I was very lucky and met my current partner, who I've been with ever since, not long afterwards, which was a total, complete amazement for me that anyone would want some woman at the age of whatever age I was, 40 something. And but I did. And there you go. But since then, and then we've done all sorts of things. I was going to move. I left work because of some issues with a line manager there and really had to take a step into making the cakes. I had no choice because I couldn't. The work and work related anxiety just went through the roof and I went off sick. And then they just decided that, because I was making cakes as a therapy, that I had ulterior motives to do cakes for a living. And I would say to them at the leaving interview, which they said this to me, if you really think that I'm leaving a well-paid job to eat cakes, you're very mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice. This is what I have to do. And then we were moving to France and we sold a house and we put everything into it. And 3 years ago, my partner would go there every year and I'd stay back in the UK and I'd teach and keep him and we'd, you know, keep ourselves afloat while he was building us his home. And we moved to France, lock, stock and barrel, 3 years ago. And that was its own experience. I've written blogs about a lot of this, so... it's about that. I did a lot of cathartic writing about it in the last year, which is where the whole well-being and mental health realization has come into it. But it ended up, it's hard to, the Brits abroad are a strange species. It's very clicky,
mm-hmm.
and it's like living in a playground. And I've written this out publicly, so saying it publicly is, you know, it was like living in a playground. Someone you'd meet would say, who are your friends? And if you'd say somebody they didn't talk to, they didn't talk to you. Yeah. Or you'd make friends with people and then you'd meet someone else because you were then friendly with them. That other person that you'd got to know dropped you like a lead brick. And it still makes me feel sick.
Yeah,
thinking about what it was like. And we ended up with people just not talking to us because we're very outgoing and very, you know, we're friendly, we're helpful, and it ended up in a big in an awful situation, and the experience I had was someone pretty much telling me that they didn't want to be my friend, and I wasn't allowed in their house anymore, and all sorts of things.
That's awful. Yeah,
anyway, and I was literally the next day. They told me this, and I'm not. They told me this at 5:30 the night before I was due to drive back home on my own with my partner's mum and to the UK for 6 weeks to leave my partner in France on his own with nobody talking to him. And I couldn't tell him what had happened because, oh my God, I'm telling this out personally. And I couldn't tell him what was said because I couldn't leave him on his own worrying. But I came back to the UK and I ended up 6 weeks. I came back because I was doing, it was November, I had the cake show. Mm-hmm. I was going to Susie Wicks to do some filming. I was going to do some judging somewhere. And 6 weeks later, I just spent the whole time on the phone crying, saying, I don't understand what I've done. I don't know what I've done. What have I done? I don't know why I've done, why are they doing this to me? And they was coming back to meet me so we could drive back to France together because I'd been so full on and so busy. And he got off the plane and I went, I can't do it. I can't stay there living a life like that. I will not do it. Mm-hmm. I refuse to live in that environment. And I'm not living my life not knowing who I can and can't talk to or who I'm upsetting by even knowing what I'm doing. And so he agreed. We drove back to France. We packed a Land Rover and a trailer and my estate car and a top box with what we could fit in and came back to the UK. And I had a little bit of money that I was able to put down as some rent. So we started again.
Yeah.
And we still have the place in France and we absolutely love it. And it is our family, you know, I want friends and family to use it. And I absolutely love our little piece that we've got there. But it was very hard and that really hit me big time. So I started again fresh 2 years ago. We came back with no jobs and I literally went and found a job in a nursery doing admin because I needed to keep a roof over my head. And at that time, trying to teach, you know, it has become such a big entity, you know, in the UK, people teaching. Mm-hmm. And there was so much competition and I couldn't either then put myself in that, you know, I couldn't subject myself to that type of thing. And so we started again. But what I realized working full time that it wasn't me. I needed to come back to sugar. And so that's when the whole idea of Cake Minds was born. And I have to say, these things happen to you in life, and as hard and as difficult as they are for a reason. Because if I was in France now, I wouldn't be seeing my, you know, brand new grandson and my children and being able to help my own son out because he has some sort of chronic conditions that he has to deal with. And so it was like, you know, sometimes the universe screams at you and it almost has to come on and slap you around the face and go, you're not meant to be here. You're meant to be doing something. You're not meant to be here. Go home. And so here we are. I listened.
Yeah.
And as hard as the journeys have been through those ups and downs, I, for the first time in my life, feel like this is really what I should be doing. I'm happy. So
that's awesome.
My life in a potted shell, really.
Well, I mean, I kind of wanted to reach through and hug you because I know that what that's like when you think you have a friend and then it's whether they stab you in the back or they bail on you when you need them, or it's made me over the years more and more reluctant to have close friends, which, I mean, some people say, oh, that's not healthy. And I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't healthy constantly looking for validation from others when it hurts a lot. Yeah. Okay, but so let's get back to Cake Minds because can you define what it is for the listeners who haven't heard, particularly those in other countries? Because I assume it's England only at the moment or UK only.
Well, no.
It's not. Okay. I was wrong already.
No, it can be. I'll tell you how it works. The teachers have pay for a membership for a year, and that membership gives them access to tutorials. So I film all the tutorials and send it to the teachers, and then they have their own students, and they don't then pay me anymore, so the teachers can run, because I do want the teachers to be able to make a living. So it's not, what do you call it, a franchise. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's a membership that people pay, because there's no other than that kind of yearly membership, there is no other outlay to me at all. So they want to run one class with four people, that's fine. If they want to run a 2-hour classes, you know, they want to run one every single day, they can. It's really down to them. And I've got teachers doing mother and child classes, older teen classes, ladies, all sorts of things, and a real mix of different, you know, what works for the teacher, really. And so I then support the teacher. I help them. I provide them with one of the tutorials. So there's a film, a video, and they learn how to make it, and then they can teach it. And they get all the materials to advice about how to get students, all the material, all the email templates, and posters to put out in their local communities. So they deal with their local community, their local catchment area. And what I do when teachers come and talk to me is we kind of decide what their sort of catchment area is. And okay. What they're paying for as well is their little catchment area. So that might be a 30-mile radius if we're kind of, you know, not in a necessarily too built-up area, but,
yeah,
you know, towns around you. But if you're, for example, a more rural, like Geraldine's over in Northern Ireland, and so her catchment is almost what we decided with an hour's drive that people might do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her catchment area. That's your area until you decide you can't cope anymore and we can put another teacher in. But obviously it's too early a day to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher runs her classes, and so she's got regular students, and I'm hoping, and I think we're all agreeing that some of those students then want to do the teachers. If they run other classes, they feed into that, because we're looking, you know, a new audience, really, of people doing a new craft. So it's all online. It's all virtual. Have a staff room. I'm blown away. The teachers that have come on board so far and the support they're giving each other is just phenomenal. And I think we're very, very unique in that, because there's no, because the teachers do have their own catchments, there's no competition at all. They are open with how they're doing things, how they run their classes, with sharing the work that they're doing. So, for example, I filmed the tutorial. I can't physically take photographs of it at the same time and do a step-by-step guide. So I have had teachers, because that's how they like to work, make a step-by-step guide, and then they're sharing it with everybody else.
Mm.
And then that goes on the website, on the tutorial page. And it's like they're going beyond anything mm-hmm. I expected anyone to do. And they're helping each other. You know, so teachers who haven't taught before, or I've got this like encompassing, embracing kind of support around them, saying, well, you know, it'll be fine, and this is what I do. So they've got not just me saying what, how I teach, but all of this wealth of experience and support within this group. And because very often, you know, it can be very competitive mm-hmm. and people can be very secretive. So it is very refreshing that it's working like that.
Yeah, I think the catchments are a really good idea. That's because I know that when I saw Helen Marie was doing this, I went and looked at it and I was like, oh, okay, I don't have time for that, one. But two, even if I did, I wouldn't have wanted to step on my friend's toes. So the fact that you have catchments means that you're getting rid of that problem. That's brilliant. Yay. Well done.
That's what I want. And this is that kind of like that, like you say, that kindness thing. It takes away the need to not be kind, because there is no competition.
Yeah.
There's no competition at all.
You pre-excise the drama.
As many or as little classes as they want, and everyone sharing everyone's classes, so that the word is getting out, and it is amazing. But it doesn't have, I mean, it is UK-based at the moment, but moving forward, it certainly doesn't need to be UK-based, because it's all done virtually.
Right. Okay. So, if someone listening in Oklahoma or something wanted to do this, they can. We'll make sure all the links and everything are in the show notes. But so if someone's like, oh, you know, that sounds like a really good program, I want to be part of it, wherever they are, they can join in. Excellent.
Yes, absolutely. And so then they start with like term one, and they'll run their class, and then if they've done four classes or 6 months later and they've got other people that want to join, they can start again from term one and roll that out again, and they can do that as much as they want. And all I have is kind of that membership money from them, but they get, there is so much available, all the promotional stuff. I've got loads of, and I'm always working on this, the social media posts, there's stuff that's already made for them to do that. I've been doing little tutorials on how to, so for example, there's also a technical, I've got some bolt-ons where we could do one-to-ones or a technical support where some people haven't really used Facebook, and they don't know all the ins and outs of it. So mm-hmm. I will help them create a page, and I've done videos on how to make do an event. I've done some on some like graphic platforms. Just the other day, I'm going to do one on. Maybe it's okay. Most people know how to use Instagram, but not everyone, you know. And it's just they're trying to build this business, and I'm just trying to give them a bit of a step ahead. And I don't profess to be the expert at any of it, but what I know, I will share with you. So here's how to do a story on Instagram so that you're not floundering and mm-hmm. all that type of thing. But a lot of the graphics are already made. I'm trying to think what's in there. I've given you a bunch of hashtags to use on Instagram. I've given you places, social media, press releases, and all that type of thing. So each teacher is then works in their own local area. They've got posters they can go and put in the doctor's surgery and the library and everything like that. And then I deal nationally. It's my job to kind of, because it's my passion, and I deal with it, all the rest of it. But so they don't need to worry about that big picture. That's for me to think about. And I've got lots of exciting things moving forward. We also want to value our students as well, and I'm very keen on adding value to the students. So the student, another bonus for teachers to offer their students is a termly newsletter with tutorials in it, and they get put into little prize drawers, so they get a goodie bag. Somebody will get a goodie bag. Oh, and they cool. also have their own student room. So they and the teachers, so this is another kind of bonus for this team. For me, this is a little step away from me. Monetary wise, I'm not getting anything from this. Do you know what I mean? No, I don't mean it monetary wise. I mean, as in, I'm running a business, I need to make a living. That's it, end of the story, mm-hmm. isn't it? But the students who pay the teachers, that's their income. We've set up a student lounge, and they go in there. They are making their and sharing their work, their first steps into Sugarcraft. And they have the support of all the teachers. So all the teachers are running the staff room. I mean, can you imagine how many? We're on track by the end of this week to have nearly 20 teachers in 4 months, 5 months, October, November. Yeah, 4 months we've been going.
Wow.
And so far, I've been running in front of all the teachers to make sure that they have everything that they need, and I'll see a little pocket of something that, all right, okay, that's something we need to address there. So, you know, I'll say, have you used Canva or something to make your graphics? And they go, well, I don't know what that is, and how do I use that? And that's so I've done a video on it, you know. I need to help them. So that's my job in it. That's where I see myself, is enabling a teacher to either come on board, having their talk before, wanting to go into teaching and having that supportive network, or people that are already teaching that don't want to give any second thought to another class. What project am I going to do this month?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Ruth's done this. They're all little fun things with, you know, they're not basic things. I like to try and introduce different techniques and mediums each time, and they're fun little projects. And so, yeah, it's bigger. And so, although I haven't mentioned in that what I've just talked about, well-being or mental health, the knock-on effect of that, what it generates is mental health, well-being, mindfulness, mm-hmm. just through providing people regular contact with the same people each month, just 2 hours. That's all it is. Each class is 2 hours long. My students come with their own tools. They sit at my kitchen table, and I'm going to say, so at the moment, this is another journey I'm going on, okay? I started off in a three-bedroom terraced house around my kitchen table. I moved to a bungalow that had a beautifully big kitchen with a big kitchen table. I'm now back in a two-bedroom terraced house with another smaller table. And in the next month, I'm moving and downsizing and doing that simplifying of life, because it's another part of my story. And my partner and I, sorry, it's just so funny. It's not. I'm moving into a static home and really downsizing. And I'm hoping that I will still be able to have a kitchen table. And my students, at the most, there will be three, come to me once a month, and they know what's happening, and they are more than happy to come. It's not about how big your house is, how posh your school is, or any of it.
Yeah.
Students come because they want to do something. I say this from 7-8 years of experience, and having had, over 50 students, more possibly, over the time, who say to me, I just love coming here, and I just love to make something and just being with other people and making friends. That's all it's about. They don't mm-hmm. worry about their surroundings. I'm heading this up, and I'm moving into a static home because I can't cope with renting for the rest of my life. It makes me shiver and everything. So that's my, as I say, I'm 58. I'll be 60 in 2 years' time, and I have to think long term where we're going. Mm-hmm. Because of the things that have happened to me in my life, I'm not in a situation to get a mortgage. It just won't happen. And realistically, my neighbour moved into one in the summer, and I was blown away by it. It gave me more social space. I'll have a little studio to work in, and it'll be brighter than sitting in my lounge where I am at the moment. It'll open up. I'll have patio doors. It's everything I want. Mm-hmm. And for me, life isn't about, big houses and all that. I've been there, done that. My husband, when we were married, had an amazing job, have had all that. And now at this point in my life, it's like, that's not really what's important.
Yeah.
It's, it's the people you're with, it's your family, it's what you do. And it's those the important things. So the cake of mine is kind of, for me, it kind of encompasses all of that. So I want it to be accessible to people to come on board and teach. I want it to be, them to be able to make a living from it and it not be expensive for students. So my kind of price range, what I recommend in the UK is, and my guideline with it is about £25-30 for a 2 hour class, and the student comes and that's everything. All the materials, all the teacher pays out for, but they are small projects. They're only projects that can be done in 2 hours in, mm-hmm. In reality. So some cake drums and some sugar paste and maybe some wafer paper, or we'll maybe use down the line. There's some isomalt, but I'm thinking, right, if I'm using isomalt, that might be an outlay for the teacher. So let's get a few months under our belt of teaching, and they'll have the money where they can, I think, outside the box in things that we use, and it's not all cake stuff. And it's about affordability and accessibility for me, and always has been. So, yes.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable. It's a reasonable price point, because again, it's not targeting someone who can already make a 6-tier cake. Not that someone who can make a 6-tier cake might not want the camaraderie and social thing of it, but it's. Yeah, it's making a cool figure. It's doing the techniques, because I saw one of your projects had like the wired snowdrop. So presumably teaching them basic wiring techniques and things like that.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes.
And so yeah, the sugar paste or gum paste or flour, whatever type they're using, it's not going to be that much of an outlay. And if they're doing it in their homes, because when I've tried to teach, that's been the biggest thing. I'm not allowed to teach by my rental agreement in my house. Also, my house is a disaster all the time. Looking for venues
landlady's one of my students.
Oh, well, that helps.
Kimberly, I have coffee mornings, sweetheart, okay? They're always around it.
Yeah, no.
Did I say that out loud?
When I mentioned to our landlady, I might start teaching classes, like, she wheeled on me. She's like, that's prohibited by your contract. And I'm like, all right. I've tried to do things where you book a school or whatever, even my kids' school, but it's really expensive.
So I have a lot of teachers who have can't teach at home for a number of reasons. And although I'm saying I'm going to do it in my caravan and my trailer or whatever, that I respect that that's not everybody's situation. For me, it's just me and my partner, and he's so laid back.
Yeah.
He'll probably be sat on the couch in his gym jams while they're learning. but my students are used to me and those situations.
Yeah.
And they know him and all that sort of thing. But I totally respect that that's not everyone's position. So a lot of teachers are having venues. And what I've said to them is, okay, you've got that expense. So let's charge the student. What about charge the student that £25-30? And then, because it depends where you live and what you can, the demographics of everything. Mm-hmm. And I respect that as well. But be open with the student and say, if you want this class to run, I have got to hire a hall. So therefore, that incurs this price. And I'm just going to add an element onto your class. And that helps to pay the thing. And majority of students I found will go, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I want to do the class. I want to learn. It doesn't matter if it costs me an extra, £5 or something. I want to learn. I want to come to this. And once they've got on board with it, and they've realised and they're enjoying it, and the projects, they are learning things and they're making something different, they don't want to leave.
Okay, guys, whatever you're working on, it's time to take a stretch. Put your piping bag down, put those tweezers down, put whatever you're working with down. Stretch your hands. Stretch your arms. Do a big stretch back. You're going to feel so much better after you do this. Trust me, guys. Okay, big stretch. Oh. Give your shoulders a bit of a shake. Right? Doesn't that feel better? Okay. Now you can get back to being awesome.
I have students that came to me 7 years ago, started with me when I first started teaching, and still come. Try to find a 2-hour class 7 years down the road.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's not easy, but they still love it.
Because it becomes that social thing.
Those actually, that lot have evolved, and we meet every other month, and they do their 2-hour blocks together. So we have a day together, and I have to say, and then we have lunch. For me, I don't feel like I'm going and teaching at all. I just feel like I'm with my friends and they're paying me.
Yeah.
And they still do. And they insist that. And I keep saying, yeah, I can't charge you. And they're saying, no, you, it's your job. That's what you do. We're going to pay.
Yeah.
And so, that is what it's all about. Not them paying me. It is that they still want to do it, that they still want to come together as a group and do something together and learn and just have fun.
If one of them was going to teach some crochet classes, you would pay her to teach you the crochet classes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it wouldn't occur to you. But when we want money, when we ask for money, at least me, I just always think it's very Canadian, but maybe it's just women or something. But I always feel like, oh, don't pay me. But something in my head is going, I want money.
Yeah. This group particularly have been my staunch students for years. And I used to run cake holidays in France. I used to do a week ladies only, 4 ladies at a time, and they'd come over and they did was get on a plane from wherever, and we'd pick them up and look after them until they got on the plane home for a week. And they would come 3 times a year, some of them.
Wow.
And so this group particularly, as soon as I came back to the UK, were going, can we do another cake break? And I said, I don't want to do them officially. It's not where I am at the moment. Let's do this. You go and find a house to hire. You pay for my accommodation and my food, and I'll come and we'll do some, so those classes you talked to me about at the very beginning with the armatures, the big figures, that's what I do with them for a week.
Oh, wow.
And they all make their own figure So they decide what they're going to make, absolutely from 100% what they're going to make, and I help them. I enable them to do that. Like Mike McCary's work.
That's what I was just thinking, yeah.
So, you know, you want to make, a tower block or whatever it is, you know, a flying car, you go and see Mike McCary and he'll show you how to make it. Well, that's what I did with my cake holidays. It was just big figure work and they all went home with a figure.
I mean, that's really awesome. Like, I kind of wish... I don't play the lottery because I can do math, so I'm married to a mathematician. But if I ever won the lottery that I don't play, oh, that's what I'd want to do. I've had fantasies because I know in the UK there are a lot of these places where you can go for a weekend and do pottery. You know, like, I want to do that. I just want to go make stuff all the time and never have to wash dishes.
There's an amazing place up in Scotland that I discovered. The WI have got one, haven't they? Denman House.
Which yes, that's right near us. Yeah.
And then there's another one that I know of because I was going to run a break up there. It might be on the cards at some point in Scotland called Dartmoor House. And they do all sorts of creative crafts. And they're they're not unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
It's very basic accommodation, but it's lovely. I think it's lovely. And they do felting and loads of different crafts. Dartmoor House in Scotland. And it's all full board and everything. And it's beautiful country house in the hills, Stirlingshire way, and that's often something I've thought, oh, I could fancy doing that.
They'll
rent it out to me for a week and I'll go and run a class.
Yeah. Well,
not just yet. My cake minds community, but a well-being week where I'll make you do other things other than sugar craft.
Yeah, well, okay, can I sign up? That sounds. I have a T-shirt that Kyla, who runs the Austin show, gave me. And Kyla sends me a lot of shirts. And one of the ones, I was just wearing it last week, and people were just so charmed by it. It says, I make things because I get sad if I don't.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, yeah, I do so many crafts. And again, thinking of the whole, what we were saying about crafts back and forth, I have done rug cooking in buttercream. And I've knitted cakes. So I like doing other forms of art and picking it apart and saying, how does this work? What is this? How is this done in non-edible media? And now how can I render it in edible media? I love that. I wish I could make money doing that.
I'm like that. That's me. That is me. I've always done creative crafts from when I was a child. My parents were very much, if you can't make it, you can't have it. And so my whole life has been about, how's that made? I can do that. Mm-hmm. I went somewhere, donkeys years ago. My children were so tiny. I mean, they're in their 30s, And someone was doing face painting. I was like, oh, wow, I could do that.
Yeah.
Next thing I am at the school fete.
That's exactly.
The playground's emptied of all the stalls. And Rue's still got a queue of kids with their faces to be painted.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me happier, really. So...
Well, my 6-year-old was in nursery school, so she was 3, and they said, oh, you're creative. Will you man the face painting thing at the summer fair? And I was like, I don't know what it is. But you know what? It was that, it just went out of my head. There's a system here. Squidoo? No. I'm thinking, that's not it. I'll look it up and I'll put it, insert the word in.
I looked it up. It's Nazaru.
But it comes with all the colored makeup things and you can buy 20 colors or 40 colors or whatever. And it comes with the sponges and it comes with a step-by-step guide. I'm like, well, I know how to follow a step-by-step guide. I don't often follow step-by-step guides. I'm the worst for reading it going, now I'm going to do my version. But no, for the I can show the kids, do you want to be a tiger? Do you want to be a fairy? And I could step-by-step and... it wasn't perfect, but it was 3-year-old happy for were they paying? I think 50p per face paint going to the school. So that's just so funny.
It's the hardest job to do is the face painting because you're bent down as well or painting these kids' faces.
I was sitting on a stool. No, my back won't bend. No, we had it was the little kid chairs and so they were sitting in a little kid chair and I was sitting on a little kid stool. Yeah, I didn't know I could do that until I tried doing it. But then, of course, then what did I think about? Oh, now I should go paint a cake. Because everything comes back to, now I should go do that in a cake. Because this is what I keep thinking, that in all that free time I totally don't have, I have all these ideas for tutorials I could make and put a PDF for a pound or something like that. And then apparently another year has gone by and I haven't done it. But
That's like Pinterest, isn't it?
Yeah.
All these things you're going to do. That's all you ever do. You just pin things on Pinterest.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah.
Boards and boards of thousands of pictures of things you're going to do and never do because you're just too busy pinning. That's why I did guides as well. It was always an excuse to what craft are the girls going to do? Well, we'll get them to do that because I fancy doing it.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah. So I've done so many things, and I think you bring all that into your cakes as well. That's what I did, you know. So when I made figures, I started because I sew as well, and I used to make my own clothes when I was younger. So I'd think that the sugar paste would behave like fabric, which was very wrong, and I'd dress them. So I'd be making. So then, you know, part of my class was actually designing templates to make clothing for the figures and dressing them and all that sort of thing, which I absolutely love doing. And of course now there's wafer paper, but I don't do the figures quite so much anymore, so I don't get that opportunity. But that was always something I fancied having a go at. So
yeah, I've just finally learned how to use a sewing machine someone gave me a few years ago.
Yeah.
A WI friend who I think it was a mother-in-law or something passed away, and she said, would you like this free sewing machine? I said yes, and finally over Christmas I made my husband, since he's the one who knows how to sew, I said, you are going to teach your wife and daughters how to use a sewing machine this holiday. So we've just learned it.
Yeah.
And because I have a mission, and it might still even happen because I still have months, I want to make my own dress for the Cake Masters this year.
Oh, right. Yes. Good for you.
Because I have a dress that's formal enough, but it's falling apart. And I was frantically sewing it right before the CMAs in 2019. And I decided, look, I know about patterns and how cloth bends and stuff, partly because I know how to dress a sugar paste figure, as you say. So I understand, like, what a circle skirt is, right? I understand what a pleat is. Yeah. And I understand, you know, a lot assuring and these things. I understand them because I've read up on them and then tried to do them in sugar. And sometimes you can and sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
Or you have to do it a different way. Like I've made chainmail. The way you make chainmail in sugar is you use your Dresden tool and you pick it one direction in little arcs one way. And then you either turn it or turn your hand and make it little arcs the other way. And then arcs and arcs and arcs. And when you do that, and then you do a silver coat, like you make it out of a black paste or a green paste or something. And then you do a silver coat over top. Yeah. It looks like it. And I learned that from painting D&D minis. So
wow. It
all blends together. But yeah, so I decided I know how dresses work. If I understand the conceptually, if I take this dress that fits but is falling apart and the millimeter map out every portion and every seam, I should be able to replicate it in similar cloth because I know enough about sewing to know that I don't know anything about sewing and that different cloths behave differently. But I know that if I get a similar cloth and then I go to Spoonflower where they'll print me a Star Trek fabric. See, I'm going to wear something super nerdy I made myself to the Cake Masters Awards. But it's this blending of one craft. I mean, at the Cake Masters, someone's wearing a mirrored coat last year. Like people, it's a creative party and it's celebrating all that crossing of who makes what where. And I know I love if someone wants to do just one craft forever, that fine. But like, if you can branch out, people branch out.
I think it opens up all of your crafts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Cross them over and do that multimedia type thing, or just bring techniques in from one to another. And I think that is, you know, it's also like the whole thing, but especially with doing figures, it's like, you know, mine used to then they go to the hairdressers and have their hair done.
Oh yeah.
Yep. You know, so you're a hairdresser, a makeup artist, a seamstress, and a body fitness.
Yep.
My figures always had the body that was hiding underneath mine. mine's just got a few more layers on top.
I keep
underneath. That's what I look like.
See, that's I like Carlos Luchetti's figures because they're fatter than I am. he's rail thin, and he talks about how he just loves the fat and the round. And when you watch him do a demo, you can see he's a man who's in love with a curve. And he the plumpness and his beautiful figures that are just so. I mean, the tiny ankles, giant, you know, balloon and with the head on top. And that's such a Carlos Luchetti look. And I love it. And I kind of want to make like a Carlos Luchetti figure at some point, just for no good reason, just because I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. in all that time.
He's a very distinctive, aren't they? He's got very distinctive figures and very, very stylized. Amazing.
Yes. And so, like, his faces are like, there's almost nothing there. It's that human ability to detect a face in nothingness. And then other faces are just so detailed.
The cleanness of their faces. I think it's the simplicity and the cleanness that work so well with Carlos's faces.
Mm-hmm.
They are just, they're beautiful.
This is why I keep telling people, look, if noses scare you, you don't have to actually put noses on figures. You can have stylized faces that don't have, because noses can be a problem for a lot of people. They can be very intimidating because if you make them too big or too, like, they can get suddenly weird. And a nose can age a face so significantly because of how our faces grow. Babies have tiny little noses and their faces are all down in the bottom third, and then as you grow, your nose gets bigger and your eyes move up and all that, and then the wrinkles start forming. Yep. And all, but like, so if you're trying to make someone if you're trying to make a figure that looks like someone else, and you're really nervous, just reduce, because the client actually doesn't want to see themselves exactly. They don't want to see them not them, but if you just do the suggestion of what's iconically them, that's going to make them happier than 100% realism that doesn't look like them.
No, absolutely. I think you have to go for more of a caricature and a style and find that. I remember making a bride and groom topper for a bride and groom, funnily enough. And she sent me in the early days when I was doing this, and she sent me all the photographs, and I quite happily made this couple. And generally they don't see them before the wedding. And she asked if she could see them, and I sent her a photograph, and she came back and said, "My partner is not ginger." And I was like, "Oh, right, okay." But in the picture, his hair was ginger because of the way the sun was on it.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to change it very, very, very quickly.
Mm.
And my lesson there and my advice whenever I did a class then was always ask them in writing what colour the hair is, you know, so that you don't make a mistake. Oh, dear. But, you know, they just kind of photographs, you know, she was just not happy about me making him a ginger. But obviously it was really.
And something about gingers.
Because the sun was making it ginger. So
yeah, my hair does that.
There you go. But I haven't got a problem with ginger hair because I was ginger when I was younger. So I just like to put that out there. Okay. I'm not being gingery.
Yeah, I just often find you're better off doing the iconic. I used to do demos often for the Austin Cake Club. And when I first done well at a show there, and people were like, "Oh, she can actually do things." And I was like, "Oh, I can actually do things." I was doing a demo. I'd made all these mice. It was the music theme that year. And I'd made all these mice. And every mouse was actually exactly the same. My modeling skills were not even that great back then. But you could look at that and you knew that one was Elton John because it had big glasses and it was sitting in front of a piano. And you knew that one was Michael Jackson because it had one glove and a red coat. And you knew... And so this is what I was telling them. Look, you don't have to nail it. What you need to do is think, what makes this character this character? If you find there was one or two, you know...
Absolutely.
Icons, then you
it's
then
the ha- it's that it's the hairstyle, the color, you know, and the color. It's, you know, maybe it's if you can get the shape, if they've got a long thin face, then look at those things. How they're dressing, you know, are they someone that wears jeans and, you know, put them in that type of things. They will look at that and see that themselves, you know. So as long as they're not looking for a mini me, which is an impossibility, really, at the end of the day. That's a major skill. You know?
Yeah, there are some people who can do it.
Jaw-dropping.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Madness. People that can make mini-me's of people. It's just, wow. People can't, there is that expectation that that's what you have to do, or, you know, but it is, it's about, and that's another thing, being able to work with students on a long-term thing. And part of the tutorials I do is I'm talking through and doing the tutorials because I can talk, as you probably noticed. It's like I'm constantly explaining what I'm doing. And because I do have some experience with students, I can say they might find this a bit difficult. So watch out for this, you know, and it's but also reassure them, say to them, you know, this might not turn out right this time, or it doesn't matter. Like you're saying about this, you know, think about the size of the nose, you know, just those important parts and reassuring people that it's not about it being perfect, you know, and that also they kind of like will find their own style within it all as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it is fascinating. And it is, I think, it is nice when you see something that's a bit different. It's a bit refreshing. And, you know, Carlos's work, you can see a lot of inspiration in people's work that have done stuff with Carlos as well, which is always good. And they kind of then, you'd probably find there's like a journey of faces and styles that go from an absolute mini-me to the whole round face with the holes in that we all used to do. You know, that's actually where, on my Facebook page somewhere, it's something I must share again, but when I first started and what got me into doing figures was I was doing a cake and it was a guide, it was to do with guides, so brownies and rainbows and guides and all the rest of it, or Girl Scouts, whatever. And I did these figures and I was so proud of this thing. I am going back 10 years when there were no tutorials on how to do any of this.
Mm-hmm.
You just floundered your way through it. So rolled a ball and put some sugar pearls if I had that they were round, or probably little rolled balls of black, or just two black circles on for eyes type of thing. And then got my not my Dresden tool, but an FMM tool, which has got the scribe tool, which has got a point on it, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And stuck that in for the mouth. And then I thought, oh, that doesn't look very good. That needs it's a mouth. It needs to be red. So painted the mouth red and did all this cake and these brownies, and these guides are all sitting around this campfire thing that I'd done. And my partner walked in and went, oh, that's really, really good. He said, you do know that they look like blow up dolls, though, don't you? They won't know, but it was, and I went, that's it, I've got to improve on my face and get that better, you know.
I'm picturing that now.
And that was my kind of like my kickoff point of like, this will get better. And so everybody who had a cake for me, it was like, do you want a figure on it? No, it won't cost you any more money. No, I'll just put a figure on it, just so that I could make figures and work with faces and you know, so the figure was included in the price of the cake, I have to say. It wasn't like that. It just, I didn't, you know, and I loved making them as well. So it was always, you know, someone doing a graduation and someone in a prom dress and, you know, the type of thing. And granddad when he was a postboy, when he was 6 years old sort of thing, and his woodbines and that type of thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there must be this journey, though, of faces, not just mine, but everybody's.
No,
everyone's faces together. This kind of an art, a museum of all sugar craft faces. That would be quite interesting. So,
yeah, well.
And how many different ones there are.
Well, exactly. So I'm losing track now. Two or three CIs ago. I mean, it was the first time I was podcasting there. So I listened to some recorded demos with, it was Carlos and Sachiko. See, now I'm blanking. I'll have to go back and link to the episode. But there may be someone else. But there, and all of their faces are perfectly reasonable ways to do faces, and all of them are completely different. But we all know them when we see them. I mean, speaking of divorce, when Lorraine Duffy first rechanged her name back to Duffy from McKay, I didn't know that she changed her name, and I saw someone named Lorraine Duffy sharing pictures that were clearly Lorraine McKay's faces. And I was livid that someone was ripping off my friend. And only then did I was smart enough to ask Kyla first, because they're besties. And I said, wait, is this the same Lorraine? And she's like, yes, she's just changed her name. I'm like, all right, good, because I was about to eat her alive for ripping off our friend. Because it was such a Lorraine McKay / Duffy face.
So Lorraine was around. That's right. So really back then, even Carlos wasn't doing stuff when I started.
No, because he's more new. Yeah, yeah.
But Lorraine was doing a lot. Lorraine was kind of the person that was doing figures, if I remember rightly, and that's not such a brilliant memory, but not Lorraine, but just my recall of back then. It was all in the days of Flickr and everything, and that's where you got all your stuff before Facebook became a thing. And Lorraine, okay, at the time, and she was going over to America to teach, and I was like, oh, my God.
That's because she and Kyle are besties, that's why.
What she was doing. Yeah. And then that journey from then till now for me has been, well, And I just think that anybody can do that. Even the industry now, although it's there's a lot of people and there's the talent is, you know, mind-boggling, I still think people can get in. It's an industry that you can get into and you can work with, and you, it's so diverse in so many ways. And you don't have to have mini-me's. It's just about the characters that you make and how people, you know, react to them and finding your style that, you know, even the simplest of figures, you know, is about your style. And, you know, sometimes saying, you know, this is my, I could never get into the mini-me thing. People say, I always know it's your work, which is a huge compliment. I always was striving to do mini-me's, and it got to a point where I was like, this is not working for me. This is what I do. Right, okay. This is accept what you do. This is my work. People like it. Stop trying to push yourself when it's not going to happen. And just, you know, it wasn't about not self-improving, because I watched people come through that journey and they're still, you know, they are improving. But just I was happy where I was. Mm-hmm. I was accepting of where I was. And I had other places to go within the industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was that sort of thing. But as I say, there's still nothing saying that other people can come in and, you know, still make something of it. It's still an industry that's growing and forming and changing and adapting and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's totally, I mean, I'm not a piper and I'm not a flower maker, and that's fine. Like, I guess if someone wants to open, if someone is desperate to actually make a living from cake, and I'm really resisting just laughing because how few people can make that, just like a full-time living, and if you're, unless you're doing a bakery shop, but like, okay, if you just want to make cakes because you enjoy the art and you want a few clients, you can actually say, I don't make flowers. You're allowed to say, or I only make flowers. And there's even room for, I know people, mostly in the US because just numbers, I know people who all they do is make the flowers or the figures or the toppers for their friend who makes the fully fondant covered cakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can find partnerships. If all you want to do is make, you know, royal icing plaques, you can find someone who will take those off your hands because there's someone out there who hates having to make them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There is. And it's so much more accessible now to do all that with, you know, social media and Etsy and all those different platforms that you can sell on and advertise on, that it is something that you can do, but it's not easy. It's no magic wand and you have to work at it, especially when you're first building your business up. So
you do have to get online.
It's taken me 10 years to get to this point where I think, oh yeah, no, this is really where I want to be within this industry and with what I want to do. I'm bringing everything in that I've done. So it's all part of, you know, all this experience. And even my past jobs all come into play with it, because they all fit into that kind of running a business and all that type of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, here I am using my journalism degree. podcasting wasn't invented when I was doing my journalism degree in the early 90s. The internet existed, but not with graphics. So when I did my radio classes, I learned how to edit on reel-to-reel tape, which is why Debbie Gord's reel-to-reel machine she just posted blew my mind. I mean, always everything she posts blew my mind, but I was like, I remember those.
Yep.
And when I showed it to my husband, because we always play the game of when Debbie Gord puts up a new cake, I try to hide what, like, the side panel where it says the words, and I say, do you know what this is? And he's like, yeah, that's a massage table. No, it's not. It's a cake. And this one got him again because it had been a while since she'd posted anything. He says, oh, I thought you were investing in some old school machinery for your podcast. And I was like, oh, hell no. No, I like digital editing. This is so much easier than what I had to learn on. But yeah, I mean, we all bring that stuff in and find your niche. And there's, you know, if you want to make stuff. And there is a little bit of, I mean, some people need to make money and some people don't, but like also you can just make things and enjoy them, and not everything has to be a money-making venture if you just want to do it.
No.
If you have money from somewhere else, you can, it's actually valid to say, I just want to sculpt cute little animals and stick them on cupcakes.
Yeah.
That's valid.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's just another medium to work in my opinion. I just chose to work in sugar paste because it was easier than working in clay.
Yeah, and cheaper.
You know, that was how I viewed it. I always have done.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be able to, what would I do if I worked? What else, what other medium? I've tried polymer clay, and that's not easy either, because it's such a hard, sort of, you know, thing to work with, and it needs baking and all that sort of thing. I just loved playing with sugar paste. I also don't mind that it doesn't last, because, you know, my niece, when as young children, they come in my house and my dresser was full of little sugar paste figures, which I thought was really cool. It freaked her out, you know. So that they then ended up going in the bin. Didn't matter, you know, because there would be another one to replace it. So yeah, be good.
That's why I got into it in the first place, because I was doing ceramics and stuff and the house was filling. So I thought, well, let me get into, you know, these cake things, because then it all goes away. But then I started making competition entries that I started saving. And so now we have the cake closet with the weird cakes in it. And yeah, I'm trying to get better about throwing things. I've gotten better about giving them away. That again, that weird thing where you get fans and you're like, why are you my fan? That's so weird. But here, do you want a free piece? Because take it away.
And, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've made it. That's all. Well, for me, it's the process of making is very often what gives me the pleasure, the actual process of it. So it's good. And that's what I think I actually enjoy doing, the tutorials, filming the tutorials. When I used to write for the Cake Decoration and Sugarcraft magazine, and I'd photograph everything, which was good, but it kind of
interrupted
my flow.
Yeah,
so when
it does.
I'm doing now, all I'm doing is filming, and I don't have to stop. I can wrap it on as much as I want and edit it all afterwards and be myself. It's like it's almost like my class is in front of me, and I just continue, and I can just say, you know, oh yeah, we'll do this and do that, and I don't have to stop. And that's me in my element, you know. So
yeah.
It's good. It's the making process. It's the important bit that gives us pleasure. And then standing back and going, oh, yeah, okay, they like that. I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
It works, you know.
Or I don't like it. It was good practice. Smash, start again. Sometimes it's really soon. Like, particularly, I've been trying to practice more realistic faces, because you see these videos of the people who do the thing where they put their pinkies in to make the eye things, and then they put the thumbs in to push up the nose, and then they poke into them. You know what I mean? Like that process. I keep practicing that, and mine never look like I want them to. That's why I need more practice. But like, there is something satisfying if when you've done it for a while and you don't like it, to just take your fist and go like right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Frustrations at the end, they smash cake.
Yeah.
But you can't do that when you're on deadline for a client cake.
No.
Make five faces and hate them all.
Pinky.
Yeah. So that's why you need time to practice, and that's why we need Hermione time turners. I have a fake one I bought at the Cambridge Market. It doesn't seem to work. It's really disappointing. It's very pretty, but... although, speaking of time, I've kept you for an awfully long time. I mean, we could do this for hours, but probably you have things to do.
It's been really lovely talking to you, Kimberly. Thank you very much.
And lovely to you too. And so it's... Say what the... I have it here. It's cakeminds.co.uk. And we'll put it all in the show notes too, and I'll link to your like group, so people know where they can go, and they can go see what's going on if they want to be either student or teacher or whatever it is they would like to do.
Yes, absolutely. And as I say, it's not solely UK based. We haven't got anybody in the US or Canada or anywhere else at the moment, but that would be amazing.
Okay, so who wants to be the first?
Spread the love. Sorry.
One of you has to come and be the first. Be the first international member of Cake Minds.
Oh, yeah.
You
absolutely.
Can pick your own catchment.
Okay. Yes. And apparently I'm told the exchange rate is very good, so you're in for a right bargain.
Yeah, but this is airing in about a month. Who knows where the economy will have gone? Oh, jeez! That's what I was saying in advance of CI. People who didn't know if they could come or not, because they didn't know if Brexit was going to drop during CI, let alone what was going to happen to the pound or the dollar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So again, not a political podcast, but we're affected by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But all the more reason for us to come together in cakey art love.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And if anybody just wants to chat with me, I'm quite more than happy to do. That's my kind of thing. It's nothing in the first instance. People contact me and we have an online video chat. So they get to know me, which I think they probably have done over this podcast. And just to kind of, you know, ask questions. There's no... they're not committed to anything.
No pressure.
At that point. And there also is obviously a cooling off period as well. They did change their minds, but nobody has yet.
Well, because it sounds awesome. So, yeah. Anyone who wants to get into teaching, why wouldn't they? I mean, that's it sounds like a great platform.
Yeah. So it's working well. So, right. So, very, as I say, lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast to chat about Cake Minds and me.
I'm so glad you came on. So, yay!
Yes, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much and have a great day.
And you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Speak soon. Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Good at blowing our own trumpets, are we?